KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. I'll be back with you in just a few minutes. Hello, everybody. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's a pleasure, as always, to be with you here tonight. Every Monday, we do it from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. in the morning, talking to strange and interesting and wonderful guests from all around the planet. We're going to do the same tonight. How about that music, you know? Obviously, an oriental influence, if you hadn't picked up on that. For the dimmest among us, if you didn't pick up on it. But at any rate, the Gusu Ballad. And you know what? I don't know who the hell performed it. But it's beautiful music, traditional music from China. We'll hear more of it tonight. And throughout the rest of the program. Certainly a Chinese evening with us tonight. My guest is going to be Bruce Raphael. I'll tell you more about Bruce in a little while, but anyway, going to be some great, interesting music along with the program. And before we get on with it, though, let's do our duties and say a big thank you to Debbie Johnson, as always. Free Range Radio Theater, every Monday, 10 p.m., an hour before this program. Debbie brings you great, entertaining radio theater and does a great job of it. I love Debbie. She's awesome, and it's great to hang out with her before the show here. And hello to Aaron as well. And I think Aaron's got some stuff going on at the Playhouse, and if anyone's interested in becoming an actor or an actor who's already an actor and actually wants to show someone that they're an actor, go on out to, where is it? I don't know. He probably left me a note here somewhere, but I don't even see it. But at any rate, it's, I think, the Applewood, Apple Barn, Maplewood. What is it, you guys? Anyway, you know it. Go out there and get in touch with Aaron. They're doing Cyrano, and he's looking for people to participate and to become known in the community as the actors that they already are. All right. So much for that. Anyway, thank you, Debbie, as always. Free Range Radio Theater, 10 p.m., an hour before this program, all right? Before that, Kelvin and Jason, they do it up. Jazz plus blues equals Earth First Audio. Tech Radio, as always, interesting stuff. Keeping us up to date on the astonishing world of high technology and gadget wizardry. Jeff Wheeler starts things off every Monday, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., Uncommon Light. Great music, great radio on KOPN, your imagination station, and it's a pleasure to be a part of it and here with y'all. Thank you to everyone who listened to the program last week. I got a lot of response. Thanks, as always. And a big green thank you to Susan Weed, or Susan S. Weed, as it were, doing wonderful work the Wise Woman way. Check her out on the web, Susan's work at www.susanweed, S-U-S-U-N, WEED.com. You can also spell it the correct way. Or I shouldn't say correct, but the other way. S-U-S-A-N. She's got all bases covered, okay? SusanWeed.com, the place where she does her thing. And she's a wonderful woman doing good work, okay? All right, we also heard great independent music last week. Devochka, heartstring pulling stuff from Fort Collins, Denver, Colorado area. If you missed it, the music or the talk, it's all in the archives. www.mikehagan.com in the program archives. You can go there and download them, check them out for yourself, and share them with your pals if you think it warrants. If not, put it in the trash bin where most everything else goes. All right? Okay, tonight, as I said, Bruce L. Raphael, as it were. He's amazing, this guy. All right. Well, I'm before I tell you about Bruce, actually, the reason I stumbled a little bit is because I'm going to have an in-studio visit as well, I think. And I'm looking at the clock here, and I think Rory from the Columbia chapter of the School of Metaphysics is going to be joining us to talk about the National Dream Hotline. And it's going on, I think, starting Friday. But anyway, they're going to interpret your dreams for you. You got an 800 number, the whole bit. You got a problem, got an interesting dream, want someone to tell you what they think it means. Give him a buzz, all right? And we'll have Rory tell us a little bit more about it in a few minutes when he comes in here. And, okay, about our guest at the top of the hour, at midnight. It'll be 1 p.m. in the afternoon where we're talking to him from, and that's Beijing, China. And as I mentioned, his name is Bruce L. Raphael. He's a writer and a field investigator in, interesting things like archaeoastronomy, and he's sort of an Indiana Jones type, and he's been running around the world for the last, I don't know how many years, at least 20, you know, searching out mysteries and doing it sort of the old-fashioned way, you know, just digging in the dirt. Anyway, you can't believe what Bruce is doing. He's wonderful, and there's a bunch of great imagery associated with the stuff that we're going to be talking about. If you hop on the web at mikehagan.com, just snoop down a little bit, and you'll see a bunch of links there for Bruce, a little bit about him, and, let the pictures sort of speak for themselves, but we're going to be talking about China and about ancient history there and architecture, archaeology, that exists on the other side of the Great Wall of China that very few people on this side of the wall know about. And, you know, let me tell you, there are things there. You know, the Chinese empires go back as far as history goes back, you know, written history at least. And you can tell by their art. You can tell by their music. Did you hear what I just played at the beginning of the program? I'm going to play another one for you here in a second because Roy just walked in. But, you know, listen to the amazing beauty of this music. And, you know, you don't write music like that unless your culture has been seriously involved in the arts for a long time. And I guess you sort of judge it for yourself. But anyway, we'll play another piece in a minute. But at any rate, Bruce Raphael, we'll talk to him live from Beijing in about 45 minutes. Get on the web, go over to the website, and start clicking through some of those links that Bruce has made available. And just look at some of these pictures. I mean, things that he's, you know, seen and now showing us, you know, through the wonders of modern technology. So anyway, check it out. We'll talk to Bruce in about 45 minutes, okay? All right, in the meantime, let me look at my notes here. Earth Day was yesterday. Yeah, yeah, Peace Park. Music, good music, nice weather. You know, it's Earth Day. I walked out of Earth Day. I was walking down 9th Street. There was crap all over the road, everywhere. Really. I mean, just crap, you know? Junk, all the garbage cans overflowing. Just waiting for someone else, you know, to come and clean it up. Amazing, right? Everyone's peddling all their crap out there. A lot of paper being peddled out there, people. A lot of trees being chopped down for all that paper you're peddling in the middle of Earth Day. Anyway, whatever, okay? Take it seriously. Do it on your own. You don't need a frickin' festival, all right? You shouldn't need to be reminded of these things. Live it. Stop waiting for someone else to clean up after you. You know, people talk about the garbage, and they wait for someone to take the garbage away. Well, you know, there is no away. There's no away. It's just further from you. It's just further from you. And it's getting closer. Okay? So, you should start to pay attention to the things you say, things you do, and forget about all the hype and PR that's behind all this crap. There's what I got to say. What do you think? Let's play some music here. This is called Autumn Moon on Lake. Even though it's springtime. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back in a few minutes with Rory from the School of Metaphysics. We're going to talk about dream interpretation and some cool stuff that they're doing this weekend, okay? All right, back in a few minutes. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. Check it out on the web, kopn.org. Thank you. Almost, but not quite, Will. All right. KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. And wonderful music from the East tonight. That was called Autumn Moon on Lake. And I have a couple guests. I actually got a number of people in the studio with me. I'm just going to turn on all the mics because I'm not sure who's on who. Rory, I think, is on four.
Let's pull that up, Rory. Say hi.
Hello.
Hello, Rory. How are you?
Doing very well.
Nice to have you here today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here tonight.
All right. And Jesse's just sort of hanging out over there. You can say hi if he likes. And William, he's always here, but doesn't want to say much. More a visual type guy. Me too, actually. I have a face for a radio. Isn't that what they say, Will? Perfect face for radio. All right, there you go. Anyway, Rory is here. Will's always here, but Rory is here special tonight and with his friend Jesse, and we're going to talk with him a little bit about the Columbia chapter of the School of Metaphysics, and they've got a special, they got a couple things going on, actually, so I think we'll just let Rory sort of expand. But anyway, hello, thank you for being here.
All right, well, thank you.
And websites and all that, give it all out.
All right, thanks. Basically, what we have going on at the School of Metaphysics is twofold. Besides teaching people how to improve their mind's potential through concentration, meditation, breath work, and visualization, we focus on teaching people how to interpret their dreams. And I don't know if you're like me, but as a child, when I had a nightmare, my mom told me that, oh, don't worry, honey, it's just a dream.
Right, right.
So in response to that, the School of Metaphysics for the last 20 years has been doing an event called the National Dream Hotline. This is something that we've been doing globally. Nationally, we've been on the Today Show with Matt Lauer. I've seen the pictures. It's just a wonderful thing. We've been on multiple radio shows like yourself.
Right.
And it's just, it's wonderful to be out in the community and teach people that dreams are real and they mean something.
They're certainly real. I mean, they're part of life, right? Like we were talking about. So
that's right. And so what we have going on is the National Dream Hotline this Friday starting at 6 p.m.
Okay.
It's going to go for 54 consecutive hours. So if you wake up 2 o'clock in the morning and you just got bizarre symbols, zebras in the bathroom, hippopotamuses flying out the window and jumping through windows, give us a call. Our phone number is 573-449-8312. And for these 54 hours, it really doesn't matter, you know. I mean, there's going to be people at the phones. So call us at 4 o'clock in the morning with the dreams that
that's
you
awesome.
Have.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What's the phone number? Did you just give it?
Yeah, it's 573-449-8312.
All right.
And it goes from Friday to Sunday evening.
All right, the 27th through the 29th, basically.
Right.
And this is a Columbia deal, right?
Yeah. Along with Dallas, Texas,
so
Chicago, Illinois, it's national.
All right. So everyone has their sort of local numbers that they can call or whatever. All right. Well, that's so cool. All right. So what else is happening at the School of Metaphysics? I talked to a guy. You know, I went to my own lousy archives to check who the guy I talked to with the School of Metaphysics a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, actually. I keep wanting to say the name is Scott, but it wasn't. But this girl, Kelly Naylor, was here with him. I was on the phone with him. At any rate, I can't remember his name, but we talked a little bit about some of this stuff, and I know that this they've been doing it for a long time, 20, 30 years or something. So,
I mean, the School of Metaphysics is pretty neat because Columbia, Missouri is the second oldest school location in the nation.
So
we've been everywhere from Denver to New Orleans, Baton Rouge. So we've been pretty much throughout the Midwest, and we're here to teach people how to improve their lives, whatever it is that you want to achieve in your life. Mental discipline and metaphysics helps you achieve it, whatever it is, relationships, understanding yourself, getting off medications, whatever you want to learn.
Getting back to the earth, whatever, right? Okay, I'm with you. What else is happening? The lucid dreaming thing. Tell us about that.
That's right. This year.
This is cool stuff. I love this.
Every time I think of this, I just keep smiling because it's just so neat. For 20 years, we've been doing the National Dream Hotline. Dr. Barbara Condren, one of our chancellors at the College of Metaphysics in our world headquarters, stimulated us to imagine how we can get people around the globe involved in National Dream Hotline.
Hmm.
The way it came about was the Global Lucid Dreaming Experiment.
All right.
What this is from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, you have the opportunity to participate in a lucid dreaming experiment. And
what
this
date?
Is something going around the world. It's going to be on the 29th of April, this Sunday.
Okay, so Sunday. Now, we're talking to a guy from China here in 30 minutes. What the time frame? How does the whole thing work with your time zone?
It basically, there may be people around the world that are going to have to take a nap in the afternoon. They're going to be,
why not?
So it's kind of geared for us in many ways because in the central part of the United States, we're going to be waking up at 5 o'clock and then going back to sleep. The way you get in contact with the actual instructions and, you know, fill out the survey and get involved is you go to our dream school. It's going to be www.dreamschool.org. There will be a link on it for the Global Lucid Dreaming Experiment. Hopefully Mike will have it up on his website.
Yeah,
I've seen his website. It's so dazzling. I was just staring at the black and white, and the colors are just like, wow, I need to stay on this website more often.
Well, that's most of that work is not mine, but I'm proud to have it there. So, all right, well, what's the regular website for the School of Metaphysics? Is there a different website?
Yes, it's som.org.
som.org. That's right, School of Metaphysics. All right, well, hang around. Let's play another piece. I'm digging this Chinese music. I never do stuff like this. I'm usually a rock and roll type of guy. So I'm going to play another piece of music, talk with Rory, Jesse, and Will for a few minutes, and we'll see if they want to stick around. And regardless, we'll come back with Bruce Raphael from Beijing, China, if we're lucky, if we get the technology cooperating and all that stuff. You know how it's always sketchy. But anyway, I'll do my best, and we'll have him at the top of the hour, midnight. All right. In the meantime, there's a whole moon thing going on. This whole Chinese historical tradition, you know, is a moon based tradition. If you're interested in calendrics and this sort of stuff, all the Chinese calendars are moon based calendars, and the I Ching, which is this perhaps the oldest book in the world, certainly one of the oldest books, you know, 5,000-6,000 years old, is the I Ching, is essentially the way the hexagrams and the way that the mathematics that underlies the book is a lunar calendar. It's amazing, actually. So a lot of the artwork and a lot of the music that came out of traditional China is related to the moon. So here's another one. This is called Moonlit Night on Spring River. Okay, and it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And we'll be back in just a few minutes. Okay, check this out. Thank you. All right, there you go, everybody. KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. That's Moonlit Night on Spring River. Some traditional Chinese music. We'll hear more of that type of stuff. Some different stuff, too, throughout the program tonight. It's about 11:40, actually, on the 23rd of April. Already the 23rd of April. 24th coming up on us here quickly. And... wow, time just flying by. So anyway, Rory is here, and a couple other people. We'll say hi to Rory one more time from the School of Metaphysics. Hey, man.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah. Let's give out the information one more time. The National Dream Hotline going on this weekend, Friday through Sunday.
Right, starting at 6 p.m.
Okay.
And we've already had people actually call in. It's like, hey, I want some information. Call us about the hotline.
You know, pretty soon people are going to want you to do this 365 days a year. So you've got to be ready to have people asking, hey, I want my dreams interpreted all the time.
Right.
Anyway, okay, so what's the phone number?
It's 573-449-8312.
Okay, and on the web, som.org, and Dream School?
Yeah, dreamschool.org is where you'll find out about how to participate in the Global Lucid Dreaming Experience.
Yeah, okay, all right. So, and on the web, check these guys out and see what they're doing, and if you like it, you know, get in touch with them. It's pretty easy these days. So, all right,
thanks.
Thank you, Jesse. You too, thanks. All right, cheers. Okay, everybody, let's see. Hello, first of all, to everyone listening this evening and every Monday on KOPN over the traditional airwaves or through the internet, web streaming broadcast that we do now every Monday. We broadcast the show from the studios here of KOPN, lovely downtown Columbia, Missouri. And we stream the show live as well on the web, kopn.org. Just click on the Listen Live button. You'll get a lovely 64K stream, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, assuming that everything works the way it's supposed to work. Also, you can check out CosmicWavesRadio.com, and they do a sort of sister thing with me on Monday nights. And I appreciate the work that all the good people over there at Cosmic Waves have been doing for a long time and supporting internet radio like they should. CosmicWavesRadio.com. All right, thanks to everyone who makes it happen. Also, a big thank you to Larry, the Web Wizard, as always. Hope to have him back with us soon. He's back in Hawaii, getting settled in. And, well, like I say, can't get back to us soon enough, all right? Larry, I love you. Thanks as well to all the people out there sending art, music, poetry, etc. I love it. I wish I could stay on top of it. I'm sorry if I haven't, all right? But send more. We'll find a place for it on the site, and... you know, we'll share it with other people. I've got, you know, Will, who everybody knows by now because he's always in and out of here, but he's a great photographer, and he's, you know, I got to make a place up on the website for more of this photography because there's so much great art that's going on. And this is just in my neck of the woods. You know, just locally here, there's so much great stuff going on. You know, photography, music, dance, poetry. You know, I was sort of giving Earth Day a rough time earlier, but it is a great... You know, it's both sides of the sword, as always. You get a bunch of great, creative, imaginative, you know, insightful, thoughtful people that are out getting together. And, you know, that's good stuff, and I'm glad. But there's amazing art happening, and, you know, it's just a matter of paying attention in the middle of the whole thing. That's all I'm saying, you know. But anyway, great stuff, and trying to do my best to share it with other people on the website at MikeHagan.com, okay? So, we've got Bruce Raphael, believe it or not, on the phone with us. We'll bring him to you live from Beijing, China in about 15 minutes. And in the meantime, let me, do a couple things here. Let me give my email address. If anyone gets wants to get a hold of me, of course, orbitradio@aol.com, orbitradio@aol.com, if I'm speaking too quickly tonight, all right? But we're sort of under the gun for time, and I got a lot of things I want to get in here in the last 15 minutes. Anyway, on the web one more time, www.MikeHagan.com. Tonight, Bruce Raphael, live from China. Next week, Richard Allen Miller. Wonderful stuff. The guy, you know, too much to talk about in a short time. Google him. Richard Allen Miller. All right? Starts with the NSA about 30 years ago. Paul Stamets, I don't know. Everyone keeps asking about Paul Stamets. I'm trying, you guys. We have communication. It goes back and forth, and then can't seem to quite get it together. But I'm trying, okay? The honeybee situation, this woman, Bee Wilson, who wrote that great book, The Hive. We'll see if I can talk with Bee here soon. Everyone's concerned about the honeybee situation. But I think it was interesting what Susan Weed had to say last week. the fact that the honeybees that everyone is concerned about in this country, at least, are not even indigenous to North America. They were brought here, they're European bees, and they sort of, you know, that's what happens when you introduce a species to an environment that's not native. You know, you have to falsely hold it up, and they've basically, these populations have been falsely held up by human hands, and these are human colonies. This is an economic issue primarily. All the other bees that don't make honey and that don't have economic problems, they're doing fine. There's plenty of bees, other species, you know, that are pollinating all kinds of flowers. They're doing just fine. But unfortunately, the ones that everyone is writing about, they have a major economic impact. But it's not a big environmental catastrophe like everyone's talking about. It's an economic problem, perhaps. But it's not the end of the earth, all right? Everyone, just chill. You know? The bees are probably just saying, you know, we're sick of working for Dick Cheney. You know, we're going to go somewhere else for a while. Anyway, Patrick Flanagan, we'll see about him working on dates. Paul Laffoley, the wonderful Paul Laffoley, back May 21st, live from The Cell in Boston. Gary David, Orion and the Hopi. I think that's the 14th of May, I think. And then on the 7th of May, actually, there's a woman whose name, oh my gosh, and I, strike me down, because there's a woman who's going to be on the program in May, and I'm forgetting what her name is right now. But anyway, we're going to talk about whales and dolphins and, you know, other sentient creatures that swim and run around and do their thing here on the planet. Dr. Richard Tarnas, he's traveling right now, but we'll work something out certainly this summer sometime, the author of Cosmos and Psyche, and also, you know, the author of Passion of the Western Mind. Lord, I mean, if you got through that, you know, it's an amazing book, but it's a treatise for sure. But this guy is, you know, it's amazing how you put a work like that together and then do it again. You know, Cosmos and Psyche, something that's 700 pages or something crazy. And it's not all babble. There's good stuff in there. And I'm really looking forward to talking to Dr. Tarnas, Richard Tarnas, sometime in the next few months, hopefully. Okay. John Major Jenkins. I had a long talk with John the other night. He's great and still doing his thing in Colorado. And he's all around doing conferences and all kinds of things now. So, good to him, and good for him, I should say, and you know, everybody else who's out there and friends of the show, you know that we love you, okay? All right, music tonight. We got some interesting stuff from China. Albert Einstein passed away on April 18th, 1955. Don't forget about him. Among the things that he was known for, you know, E equals MC squared, of course, all this stuff, and his theories of relativity and all that, but he was also... you know, just an amazing creative person, and he was so interested and believed that the whole world and that the key to individuals' lives and the life of a culture and a society and a species came down to imagination and creativity, things that, you know, should be associated more with his name as opposed to mushroom clouds. You know, Einstein was as much a mushroom head as he was a mushroom clouder, you know. I mean, he was as imaginative and creative as they came. And just awesome that he did what he did. And we should start to pay attention to what he did and start to use the things that he gave us and that he taught us with some wisdom and with some respect to old Albert. All right, 1955, April 18th, he passed away. Here's to him. Peter Tompkins, April 19th, was born, 1919. Happy birthday, Peter Tompkins, great, wonderful author of so many books, including The Secret Life of Plants, this amazing book, The Secrets of the Soil, that I'm reading right now, but really strange stuff too, like, you know, The Eunuch and the Virgin from 1970, 1969, but just a brilliant guy, wrote about the Giza pyramids. We're going to be talking with Bruce Raphael in China, you know, in a few minutes, and there's amazing, amazing historical work of all kinds there. Of course, artwork and the architecture is a part of this, but there's, you know, amazing pyramidal complexes and, you know, just things that will boggle the mind. And they're all over the planet. And we don't think about much of the stuff that's been happening in China, but this is the oldest civilization in recorded history. Certainly, you know, has a recorded history that goes back 5,000-6,000 years. We were talking about the I Ching a little bit earlier, one of my, you know, my favorite book, one of them for sure. And it's 5,000 or 6,000 years old. You know, it's not a book you read for, you know, for stories. It's a book, it's an oracle. It's a divinatory tool. And it's also a calendar that charts the moon and the cycles of time. You know, these people aren't whistling Dixie. Anyway, Peter Tompkins, April 19th, 1919. And wonderful. I'm actually thinking of this book that he wrote called Secrets of the Soil, and it begins with a quote from Rudolf Steiner, who's another one of my favorites, right? And Steiner said, "So long as one feeds on food from unhealthy soil, the spirit will lack the stamina to free itself from the prison of the body." Whoa. I love it. And Rudolf was all over it, too. You know, check him out, Rudolf Steiner. We talked about him last week. But these guys, you know, this is all old stuff. The best stuff happened already. You need to go back and find it, right? The stuff that's happening now is just, you know, pomp and circumstance. But all the hard work has been done. It's just a matter of going back and finding it, like Bruce Raphael is doing, and sharing it with other people, all right? KOPN, by the way, sharing things with other people, is going to share some kick-ass music. And fun times on the 4th of May, coming up in just, 12, 13 days, something like that. Rutherford, Big Medicine, the Hoot and Howlers, John Henry and the Engine will not be there, although some people thought they would. So they're going to go to St. Louis. You want to see them go there. Caulfield and the Magic, In Thicket, Bachman, all right, all together, one night. Starting at 6 p.m., we're going to do a great happy hour show with Rutherford. Ruth is one of my favorite peoples. I just love her. And her and Jeff are writing good music and performing good stuff all the time. And anyway, lots of great stuff. Like I said, Caulfield and the Magic, In Thicket, Derek Jenkins, great musician around town, the guys from Bachman. Everyone getting together to try to help KOPN out. It'll cost you $5 at the door. Come and go as you please after 6 p.m. Great music in and out all night, okay? So be there at the Blue Fugue. It's 120 South 9th Street. Great people that run the place, and I appreciate them making it available to KOPN for this special celebration, the Spring Ding, we're calling it, and we're going to get down on the 4th of May. It's a Friday night, so put it on your calendar. All right, space weather, really quickly. You know, Scandinavia to Alaska, as usual, this time of year in the northern hemispheres. Keep your eyes out. Solar wind streams blasting away at the magnetic field. Going to cause some geomagnetic storms, and you get lovely sights in the sky then. The Aurora Borealis, as it were. Check them out. All right, and grab your 3D glasses. NASA has just released a bunch of photos, the first batch, as it were, from a spacecraft that's up now taking pictures of the sun called the STEREO spacecraft. And it's actually, they're putting together, you know, a whole bunch of different imagery to make 3D, three-dimensional images of the sun. It's really cool. And you can check it out if you're interested. Go on the web, and spaceweather.com is probably a good place to find that. Cyberspaceorbit.com, I'm sure Kent has something to say about this. If not, something to say about something else for sure. anyway, 3D imagery. Now let's, you know, scientists and whoever, take a look inside, supposedly, of coronal holes and all this sort of thing. They still don't know what the hell they're looking at, but at least they can look. Anyway, what else? Last Friday, April 20th, big, big, brilliant fireball over western Colorado. And lots of witnesses reporting stuff in the sky. And this was at the same time as the Lyrid meteor shower. But it wasn't the Lyrids, actually. This was something else. And you know, who knows what it was. The astronomers, of course, will tell you, you know, after the fact, always after the fact, right? They never tell you it's coming, right? But after the fact, they'll tell you, oh, it's the size of a grapefruit. You know, everything's the size of a grapefruit, or, you know, or just, you know,
or a bread box.
Or a bread box. You know, who the hell? It might have been the size of a house, and just great. Who knows? It might have been the size of, you know, Mars, for all we know. These guys, nobody knows, or they're certainly not telling us. That may be true. Mars may be a grapefruit up there floating in the heavens. You know, who was it, Milton, that said, you know, maybe not the God who hung the stars like lamps in heaven, but the goddess of the earth, you know? That's what we're talking about down here. The goddess of the seas and the oceans and the great schools of fish and the deserts and the rainforests and, you know, the mountaintops and the city dwellers and the whole business. So anyway, okay, we got 5 minutes or so left. I was going to do a little bit more with space weather. There's interesting stuff in the news and very funny stuff, you know. New life discovered in hydrothermal vents, these black smoker things that they find in the bottoms of the ocean 6,000-7,000 feet down, with funky creatures living around them that nobody ever expected, and that people, I mean, nobody can even, hell, they don't even live on oxygen. Yeah, this strangeness that they're finding. And then they'll tell you, that they know what's happening over on Zenebel Ganubi Prime, right? They don't know what the hell is happening here on their own planet. They tell you what's going on in the rest of the universe, right? It's hysterical, but anyway, the arrogance is overwhelming. But anyway, internet radio broadcasters dealt a setback. Perhaps, I doubt it. They'll find a way around all this stuff. Forget about these people and their control mechanisms. This guy from Australia, by the way, just came out from underwater. He was in this a submarine that he built that ran on urine. He peed on algae, and he had this whole system going. He was down there for 2 or 3 weeks. And he would, I just go into the website, okay? I'm not going to tell you. Australian aquanaut emerges from urine-fueled sub, okay? Just go, it's enough, all right? It's a psychedelic experience just talking about it. But anyway, guys are running around underwater in their own submarines fueled by their own urine. Right? And having a great time, by the way. There's lots of good stuff to see down there, apparently. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break here and play a short piece of music. And we'll come back with Bruce Raphael live from Beijing, China. We're going to talk about who knows what, but ancient, wonderful history and mystery. All of it coming up in just a few minutes here with Bruce Raphael. All right, hold on. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. This one is called White Snow in the Sunny Spring. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Bruce Raphael.
You're listening to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
That's right. It is Mike, and you are listening to Radio Orbit. Just a couple of ticks past midnight now on the 24th of April, 2007. And it's a pleasure to be with you, of course, tonight. Well, my guest tonight, his name is Bruce L. Raphael. He's a writer and a field investigator in topics on archaeoastronomy, the lost science of cosmogenesis. He developed the thesis of megalithic science in Australia that eventually became the book, Let the Truth Be Known, for at least 16 years, I'm sure many longer than that. He has been on an amazing odyssey that's taken him from, well, we'll let him tell you where the beginnings were, but certainly to Australia and to New York City back in 2001. And now, through the latest time tunnel, his research has taken him back to the land of the Golden Walk, China, Beijing, where he lives now and where he joins us. Bruce Raphael, thank you so much. Welcome to Radio Orbit.
Yeah, how am I sounding? Am I clear?
Perfectly clear. It's amazing. I love it. Thank you.
Oh, great. It's very special to be on the air with you. I just wanted to thank you and the listeners of Orbit Radio to be present at this late hour in America. And I'm enjoying this time to both introduce the topic matter and be part of your family of cosmic friends.
All right. Well, I think to start things off, first things first, who is Bruce Raphael? Where'd you come from? And how'd you get to China? The Australian story might be a great place to begin after we know a little bit about your own background.
Yeah, I guess the current joke is how many passports can a man carry in a lifetime? You know, conquering continents is part of my journey, I guess. But from a very young age, knew I would have to be traveling, and you know, Australia for 16 years, now China for 1 year, brings me to, you know, the joke is a pork in the road because it's the year of the pig. This is the golden year of the pig.
Right, the year of the pig.
Double
right.
Golden year of the pig. So, you know, in one lifetime, we all hope and dream of our greatest journey to be fulfilled, and. I guess based on your one's current position on any cosmic storytelling, we all personally have a journey that, of course, takes us to our treasure. China must have been part of this because every time there's an Olympic event, for example, coming, just prior to my departure of the country, you know, I went to the Olympics, I worked for NBC at the Sydney Olympics. Now the Beijing Olympics are coming up next year.
Right.
I'll have an opportunity to join the same crew and do something with them.
Wow.
So there's a little bit of merit badge, you know, merit badge feel.
But there's some interesting background to that whole story, too. So I think we should talk about the Olympics and some of the symbology behind it a little bit later, maybe.
Yeah, it's been very interesting. Even in Australia, if I can backtrack a bit.
Please.
In the book, LTBK, called Let the Truth Be Known, I tracked down as many of the greatest storytellers that had very good, you know, cosmic or cosmic connections to time-space that if you go back to the 40s or the 30s, I was able to get people just like us doing what we're doing back then.
Give us an example of some of the stuff you're talking about.
Yeah, for example, there was one woman whose position was to make some sort of connection between the five rings of the Olympics and the five suns of time, which we know, you know, the Hopi legend of going through the hoops. Now, of course,
the world ages and all this stuff,
That's right. So the Olympic or the Olympian experience is cosmic in itself. Most people may have other opinions of the five rings, but from my point of view, I look at this five ring modality as part of our living creation. Of course, you know, the those who study TCM or Chinese traditional medicine know that the five elemental theory is essential in making progress to your, you know, understanding of the human body and healing.
Well,
right?
let's talk about that a little bit. The five elements are, Bruce.
Well, you know, the themes of the Olympic characters called the Friendlies represent the four basic elements of earth, air, fire, and water.
Earth, air, fire, and water. Okay.
Right, and the fifth one is the spirit.
Spirit.
You know, or spirit.
One that gets sort of denied here in the West a lot, though.
Exactly. And then the sixth part is the temple of heaven, which I think I might have sent you some pictures, which eventually maybe on your site we can define some
My
more,
God, Bruce, you've sent me so much in the last 4 days. I've been just like jaw-dropped
for
the last...
I'm sure. And to have a glimpse.
But it's amazing.
You
and all the links
it.
Are up there. And people, I mean, this is going to... We got 2 hours with Bruce, but trust me, I mean, he's got many, many years and outrageous stories behind all of this stuff. And we're going to get, I'm sure, just a tip of the iceberg tonight. But anyway, on the web, Bruce, let me give out the website real fast.
Sure.
And before we get too deeply going, so people can take a look at some of the imagery that goes along with this story. And it's all up there at Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. And you can also snoop on over at Kent, our great friend Kent Stedman's site, cyberspaceorbit.com. I love Ken. Everyone knows that on this program. He's one of my best friends, and I would not have been introduced to Bruce were it not for Kent. So, as always, big kudos and thanks to Kent.
Sure. So, back to the rings. When I first put up the first story of the China awareness or China on the ground awareness story, at the bottom, I decided to put a very important bit of research, which doesn't appear the way it appears usually. It's a very carefully constructed table called the Covenant of the Sun. This would represent the true Covenant of the Sun, which people have a variety of understandings of, but the solar time scale that slides through time is also defined by, you know, the five rings again. We have, you know, the age of, you know, earth, air, fire, water, and iron. Iron, I think, in this case, is the spirit part. And when you look at that chart, which is located, if you go all the way down to the bottom, it's a good way to see how each precessionary turn gave us a new position cosmically.
Mm-hmm.
For example, right now, the most important thesis that all authors, you know, from Bavall and all these others, including myself, we're all trying to bring closure to the age of Pisces.
Mm-hmm,
and the age of Pisces is basically the furrow where there is death and resurrection. So we deal with feelings and belief. To put that into perspective, when you look at the time scale, you know, we're trying very hard to imagine, if you will, where our actual hearts are through this thing. If, for example, the current Olympics that takes place this year, I mean next year, has a great impact on the world, it may not be necessarily for purposes of peace, but it may have something to do with amalgamation of history. You know, I have this theory going, and people may have heard of it, but, you know, alpha and omega points have a variety of concepts. But, you know, we are reaching an omega point in time. And I'm using this Covenant of the Sun to indicate that this omega connection with our very early beginnings in Babylon, if you will, in, you know, Sumeria, create this kind of time tunnel link to five rings, the chart itself of how a variety of great empires used the stars to accommodate all their social and cultural manifestations. So they were in alignment, right? So when you look at the chart, you should be able to get a feel based on the, if you're into astronomy and astrology, the northern and southern celestial poles and ecliptic poles are very important to these astronomer priests. They define the pillars, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm.
And without going into detail about pillars of heaven, we know that in, you know, the study of all cosmic thinking, there's the Jed pillar or the World Tree pillar.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is based on how you find your way around the stars, right?
Yeah.
So just to imagine right now, China, I'll always bring it back to China for now. Australia gave me a real connection to honor the ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to give over completely in the term cosmic intent, give over to that, and spend 16 years sort of in the wilderness of Australia dealing with what I was supposed to listen for. And the megalithic science was a favorite thing of mine from my earlier years. But to take it to the next level, this is the most exciting part, where a variety of clues were left there that deals with, you know, eco-disasters and obviously higher realms of consciousness, which, of course, the Aborigines, as the custodians, spent 40,000 years cultivating.
What do you mean, as the custodians?
Right, as custodians of secrets, custodians of where we come from and where we go. And, of course, the most complicated part is, you know, what is reality? You know, to them, the physical world is just the dream.
Sure, the dream time extended, yeah.
Right? So it's very hard to imagine that if our physical body is just a sort of a sponge board for the background of the senses, you know, the actual environment is as sensory as we are, but it is still part of a lesser, more coarse physics. So to them, higher order physics is, you know, climb the rope back into heaven. This modality of movement between the stars and Earth has a variety of characteristics. For example, when you talk about the Anunnaki, you're obviously not talking about the Aborigines, right? But you know both of them held on to star science somehow.
Tell us a little bit, expand on that a little bit. The Anunnaki, what is this for people who aren't familiar?
Right. Well, it may be a bit premature to get there, but if you could imagine in the timeline between the time where we have the establishment of Giza, you know, as a plateau area around 10,000, 12,000 BC, we know the alignment of Leo, and now we're moving into an alignment of Aquarius 1,000 years later.
Right.
Within that period of time, it appears that each manifestation of, you know, karmic empowerment of a huge way, which is Earth's own sort of problem, the group comes down and manifests itself, takes over the full range of truth. Let's assume for now that it was important for them to move into this realm.
Uh-huh.
And once they did that, thousands of years would pass, genetic molding and hybridization would occur. But what has happened, as you discuss and Kent discusses on his site, is that there is this more or less occultation of, you know, truth, right?
Mm.
So now, you know, secrets, the secret, the truth, you know, everybody is now onto this, which is good. That's a good thing.
Right, people are looking, at least, yes.
Yeah, we're looking. My understanding of it is that some people obviously have to be ordained genetically or through karma to pull their weight in the hardest way to make something happen. So, you know, I'm thankful that in Australia I met people who helped me unfold my own purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they were already onto something that was as unique as mine. But now time passes, and, you know, I may have lost contact with some, but their journey still continues. And I believe that as we bring closure to this age, everybody starts to harmonize on this one topic of how to listen for the truth and how to appreciate the truth when someone's trying to talk from the heart. So, you know, for all Orbit Radio listeners, I'm sure there are times where, you know, some of the speakers are just so intellectually empowered that it can be draining. You know, it's difficult to talk and listen.
Yeah, and it requires an attention span that not a lot of people are really willing to put forward. In other words, you got to listen intently and sort of concentrate for a couple hours. And I mean, it's stuff that's over the top for a lot of people. So,
right, to give you an idea, you know, when I was young, in the introduction of my book, which you can read at one of the links at the bottom of each of these China stories. It says, "Let the truth be known," there's a link, and you can go and link again into, you know, at the bottom, read, you know, introduction or read an excerpt. And in it, I discuss how, when I was a young boy, I'd be in the dark at night listening to radio, which, you know, my father and I built, you know, a radio.
Right, Crystal Radio.
Radio Shack.
Right.
Radio Shack.
Sure.
And it was
I
a multi-band
radio. I love it, yeah.
Wasn't it? And,
yeah.
You know, listening to the amount of telemetry and strange Morse codes and all
I was fascinated by it, you know. Bruce, I actually, one of the first things I did was tore apart my dad's radio trying to find the little people inside it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was
I wasn't so sure because those little people were already visiting me in my room, so I was already freaked out. But, you know, I just had to sort of manifest my own little truth and just plow through it, not understand everything.
Right.
But I must say, that radio linked me to, you know, more cosmic understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So I point that out because listening at night when you're only, 14?
Right.
You're 14 years old.
Sure.
And you're playing around until you fall asleep to, Green Grass on My Window or any other of your favorites.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of gives you a warm feeling that you're protected or you're safe
right. Within
the cosmos. Father and mother aside, you know, you're just there, you're on your own. So now, you know, everyone 40 years later thinks back on their roots, and some people have taken some very important steps to, you know, maturation of the cosmic assembly line, so to speak. A lot of people don't participate in it, and they go, God, Bruce, why do you spend all the time looking up at the stars, you know?
Right.
You know, why do you see more UFOs than me? You know, that kind of character. But I tell them that just you wait. You know, your time's not finished yet. So the whole thing right now is that my journey from Australia to China was through New York City, right?
And you were in media, right?
Media, yeah, and you know, entertainment business, and you know, things like that to keep it simple. I mean, as a creative person, I've had to assimilate all kinds of personality.
Oh yeah, I know it well. Trust me, I know.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, you know, birth cattle like they do in Australia. I have more friends who can fix tractors and birth cattle and do plumbing. You know, they're pretty amazing people.
Right.
But we Americans sort of have just a couple of hats to wear, so I kept it to a simple thing, like two hats. So, but I learned a lot from the Australians. So when I went back to New York for those few years, I had to go through the 9/11 transformation.
Mm, Lord have mercy.
And then bounce back, and then it gradually, you know, the currents took me to 2004, and you know, the great mystery of the unfolding of the Orient, right? Which is called in Chinese, it's Ziqi Donglai. That's the complete manifestation in Chinese of what actually the power of the Orient was, which was always the country Qin or China.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It wasn't Asia, you know, it was China. Always China. So the Orient is that, and the Occident is, I don't know, anywhere else, I guess. So you follow me so far that, you know, I had to sort of let the cosmos dictate my steps. Archaeologically speaking, however, when you went to New York, everything becomes more internalized. You know, I had to sort of savor all the incredible feelings I had from being on the Outback, or doing all my map work, which you can see at one of the links.
Which is remarkable, by the way. And again, people, go snoop around at these links. I mean, that's all I got to tell you. But go to my website and just start clicking through some of this stuff. And go to Kent's site, because there's a tremendous amount of information here. And there's all kinds of embedded links that are in these presentations on the web. But it's amazing. So anyway, go on.
Thank you. So basically, for all listeners now who, you know, imagine themselves participating in all cosmic storytelling and connectivity, my journey had to identify certain parts in history where peoples were on great, you know, expeditions. And, you know, Australia itself, as conservative a country it is academically, still has an underbelly of great, you know, mystery and profound lost histories, let's put it that way.
Australia does.
Yeah, I mean, in the new China Link, I sort of douse the reader with some great feedback of the past, meaning they said, oh, you know, some Australians go, yeah, whatever happened to that guy, you know, or whatever happened to that story. Some of the locals now in our age group who have lived through that are still, you know, doing their woo-woo thing, you know, it's still strong. But it's still quite, you know, the Australians are very calm and they don't share much unless you're there.
Uh-huh.
My job to be the radio announcer for this cosmic story. So I brought back in the new story, part two, a lot of the Chinese contact with Australia, Mycenaean contact with Australia, Egyptian contact with Australia, and things like that. And, you know, by the time I got to New York after Australia, I had to spend these many years, you know, getting all the notes organized. And the website that the GeoCities site is, like, you know, in need of repair. You know, I can't seem to get to everything, but that site will be, you know, cleaned up and fixed up soon enough. But it's a great storyboard of actual, me, you know, as a, me in the bush or looking at the huge stone or maps. All this stuff is very, very, true, honest, and real. It's just taken, no kidding, it's taken all 20 years to sort out with the help of mentors and the like what it all meant.
Sure, sure.
So in that part two part, there's a picture of a star chart dated 3200 BC, okay? And in Australia, it was always known that ancient peoples left stories in stone. It's just that, you know, people didn't understand the concrete math behind it or the geodetics. But eventually, with some clues given, this one canyon that I have to give myself credit to, that I was brought to, I put together a complete picture of a star story, or call it a temple, if you will, that was hidden in the stone. But it took years to find the actual math relationships with computers.
Uh-huh.
And pretty soon you see these pictures, it's a beautiful recreation of a time around 3200 BC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that gives you a sort of feeling that when you go through time there, certain star temples, you know, were maybe built in pieces, but they all honored a variety of modalities, you know, how to get around the planet, maybe, or understanding a greater story, which I'll discuss later, why this star temple, or what I call White House Canyon area, was so significant.
Right.
And
but,
its connection is to...
I'm sorry, but, I mean, at the foundation of it all, though, is, like you say, an actual physical usage. In other words, a way to get around.
That's right. So when you look at the Covenant of the Sun chart, you go to 3200 BC, actual date is 3116 BC, which was a consecrated calendar date all over the planet, from Persia,
right. Very strange.
China, right?
Right?
Mm-hmm. So it's apparent that great leadership had taken the whole globe from, you know, sort of a donkey cart existence somehow into the next phase, which, if you follow, you know, Egyptian history, we deal with the Scorpion King, whoever he was, though I have some ideas, and he helped redesign the culture and the power behind the culture from around that time. And so, you know, we move on. You know, we move on to China again, because enough information is available to show that China's culture is very old, but defining, you know, when they got a variety of technologies going, you know, varies. It's not like Sumeria, where they can show that in 2000 BC, you know, the Chinese were doing something amazing with weaponry. Well, they weren't, actually. They had used a lot of... it was still Neolithic in approach in a lot of parts of China, as far as they can look at. But when they look at a timeline from around 1600 BC, the Shang Dynasty, then we're starting to get into a more advanced cultural epithet, if you will, that resembled a theme that I work on in the book that discusses a shock to the planet that took place somewhere around 2300 BC. And current research in Australia indicates, and in America actually, you know, scientists are showing that there must have been some sort of plasma discharge that took place from space somewhere and struck Earth very strongly. And part of it, you know, the bad side is that it really did a bad number in the Levant and in Asia Minor and the rest of the world, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, psychically or in the higher chakras, it opened up a lot of doors in the DNA. And the code for that is called the TP9 event, or the Taurus Plasma 9 event.
TP9, yeah. Yeah.
TP9. So when you see Asian temples or Buddhist design, you can count a lot of the shells of design have a number 9. And number 9 eventually starts to define itself as almost this the physics of what they saw, and it's been proven through Pratt. If you Google Pratt, P-R-A-T-T,
mm-hmm.
He is one of the profound leaders in this research. And he and a small cell of Australian researchers have put together the rock art around the world that defines this visual impact on the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you see this sort of unusual cup and, we'll say, eye and nose guard rock art from around the world.
Right.
Right? In the
yes.
China 1 article, you'll see pictures of the bulging eye Shang god of 1600 BC. You'll see the rock art on the rock, as I call it, from Australia, with the nose guard and the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one is, oh yeah, Tara. You know, Tara Hill.
Right, that's from Ireland, though, right?
That's from Ireland.
Right.
So, you know, I think from the Gaelic Tara, in that storyline deals with, you know, Balor and the fire of the eye, you know, which obviously has something to do with the sun or maybe galactic pulse. Of course, back then they didn't have clear understanding of what was going on, but the myth and the legend, the myth carried the story. So now, the science, we're starting to understand that this is going to happen again, and it's supposed to happen very soon.
And let's clarify what we're talking about here. What's supposed to happen?
Well, the TP9 event takes place, but it seems to be, you know, I don't mean mangled, but it seems to be isolated or in and around some sort of eco-cataclysmic manifestation as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we see our weather's changing. Apparently it's still part of our whole solar system as, well, okay.
Right, right. We're seeing things on all
right.
the different planets. Sure, we're seeing lots
planets,
of things.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. They don't talk about this on CNN, but
exactly.
The scientists, the core, who honors what, you know, McCanny even discusses as some form of, you know, truth-letting, they have to sit down and say, this is really what's happening, and part of this will lead us to this TP9 event.
Mm-hmm.
So as humans, you know, we're going to experience, you know, a lot of good times, a lot of changes in our economics, you know, world economics, which is going on now.
Sure.
But on the highest level, we have to prepare for this, I don't know, invitation, if you will, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's an invitation. I can't explain it. It's more like an invitation than just a slap on the face, you know?
Right. Right.
Right?
Right. I agree with
you.
So,
in Chinese, I'll get to this. This is sort of, this will encapsulate this part before we take a break.
Good. We'll take a break after this. Sure.
Sure. Maoxian is the term for the journey of the more difficult, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Tanxian is the journey of the more cerebral astronomer priest shaman who is not so focused on martial art and, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have two. We have the graceful side of the work, and we have
the structure,
you know, like the Shaolin right. temple people who are empowered with this ability to genetically bring in more of those people, train them, and so that they become masters of the physical world with martial arts. So here in China, this sort of like two serpents, if you wish, you know, create this spin of where actually everybody is, you know, in the present moment. You have the masses, but then you have the two groups. I would be probably more of the Tantian journey. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's more of the
sure.
graceful.
Sure.
It's a karmic thing. It deals with one's karma and genetics, whereas the Maoxian are the more visceral, you know, maybe they're empowered by sort of a kundalini thing. I'm not really sure, but you can imagine, I mean, mm-hmm. martial art films, what does it talk about? It's not just violence, but it's this art form
right,
of,
absolutely.
Of grace and protection.
Yeah.
And China, with all its new films now, really has, you know, outdone itself with, you know, flying magicians and swordsmen that do incredible things. I mean, what's all that about, right?
Right, right.
And even on TV now, you know, like everybody has their favorite TV show, they still have the, you know, super karate guys and doing all that stuff, knocking down trees with their hands. It's still going on.
Right.
You know, in what I call Chinawood of Hollywood. It's Chinawood, right?
Oh, Bruce. All right. That's great. I think that's a good place to take a break, okay?
Okay.
All right. Let's do it, everybody. A huge thank you to Bruce Raphael. Bruce, thank you so much. I mean, this is a wonderful opportunity, and it's great that we can do this across the world. I'm just so pleased about it. All right, everybody. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. On the web, kopn.org. And you can find information about me and the radio program and the wonderful guests that we have on every week at Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. And this week, certainly a special one with Bruce Raphael. Information about Bruce, of course, on the website, and you can check out Kent Stedman's site over at cyberspaceorbit.com, and there's always interesting stuff going on over at Kent's site, but he's got all the stuff that Bruce and I are talking about tonight front and center. So big thank you to Kent, as always, and to Bruce and everybody else who's listening. We'll come back in a few minutes. This one is called Colorful Clouds Chasing Moon. That's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back in a few.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, and it's Radio Orbit. Now, what, 1:30 in the morning? Just about? A little past that, I guess, going on 1:40 on the 24th of April, 2007. My guest is Bruce Raphael, and it's the middle of the afternoon now in China. What is it, Bruce, going on 2:30? What is it?
I'm sorry. Oh, here it's
1:30 in the afternoon. Okay, yeah, that's right, because it's 12:30 here. So, anyway, 13 hours ahead of us on a Tuesday afternoon. Thanks, Bruce, for sticking around, and let's get back to it.
Okay. Well, just to, I don't know if any listeners come in at this hour, but if you've been paying attention, keeping up, I had to go back to my manuscript and remember the name of the character who brought in the Five Rings story. Her name was Mary Normanvale, and I use it. She's past tense now. Of course, she passed away in the 50s. But I use her character because, as a cosmic character in Australia, she wrote articles, did artwork, and all that. And I tracked it down. And what was unique about this part is that it drew a connection to, again, the Olympic connection in our family. Those listeners may be interested in, there's always someone in a family who does something great. Well,
yeah.
I have an uncle, you know, who was an Olympian.
Really? What sport?
Gold medalist. Yeah, gold medalist fencer.
Wow.
And, yeah, and he was like the coach, the everything, ref, retired, and now his son is taking over. His name, it's the Buchan's name.
That's really interesting because, it's sort of along the lines of the Japanese Zen master and the Chinese Kung Fu master, you know?
Exactly. So on our side of the family, I mean, he's a Sagittarian. You know, everything, hips, lunging, and sword fighting, and father and son team are very much alike. But the point I'm making is that when I was very young, I mean, like a child, I don't know, maybe, I don't know how old I was. In the book, I mentioned it, that my mother showed me this postcard that was sent to me from my Uncle Danny while he was in Melbourne in the 56 Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And this was what Mary Normanvale was trying to be excited about when she wrote this theory and thesis in the 50s, you know, that this was coming and that it meant something. Now, you know, flash forward through the time tunnel, I'm here in China, and here I'm speaking again about a new level, let's say, of appreciating the Olympics by incorporating the Chinese modality and theory. So as a child, back to the postcard, you know, it talked about, it was a kangaroo on the front part, and, you know, who would have known that all this was going to tie in together? And my mother was, you know, jumping around the bedroom telling me what a kangaroo is, and that my, you know, my uncle was in, as an Olympian, he's there, he was a young man, he was fencing and all that. So, you know, that Olympic postcard had something of importance to me because I brought it with me, actually, to the Olympics in Australia.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So, you know how it is. It's the touching part of any, you know, good story. There's always something that your childhood carries with you.
Right.
And so now I'm here. I don't need the postcard. Now I'm carrying, you know, the weight of a great journey, and of course, the metaphor of the five rings. So right now, when you go back to the Ark of the Covenant thing and you look at the five elements in each age we've gone through, you know, you'd have to be pretty numb not to figure out that this whole symbolism is all part of not only a telling of a story, but it's supposed to teach us something, right? And of course, it's never taught that clearly. I mean, if we have another chance, if, when my book gets published and the world reads it, everyone will hopefully take it with them to the grave, to everywhere, because in it, it takes all this into consideration so that we'll never, ever, ever forget again. I believe this cosmic part of life has to be redeemed and regulated again. So, in this part of our discussions, Mike, I wanted to bring to light the story of the two lions.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yeah.
It's a very interesting story, these two lions. You know, they appear, of course, you know, King Richard had a lion or two on his flag.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you know, he was carrying over some motif that dealt with heaven, heaven's gate, so to speak, but the gateway into heaven. And as the Aborigines knew, the gateway into heaven is through the square of Pegasus. So when Pegasus motifs appear anywhere, you're dealing with the trunk of the world tree, the jet pillar, the actual arc. In this case, you know, the Ark of the Covenant is this one, A-R-K, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, the Ark is interesting. You have the A-R-C.
Right, right.
The A-R-K.
Well, you know, I have to take a little bit of a left turn here because I've been trying to come up with a good reason to bring up your name, you know. The idea of the Ark, the A-R-C type Ark, is associated with electricity, right? And but then I'm going to try to connect that to your name and the angelic interpretation of your name, Raphael.
Sure.
And in fact, all of the angels, or many of the so-called angels, they end with the letters E-L. Your middle name is L, and the E-L is from electricity, and there's something going on here with electricity or something.
Of course. There's Jupiter. Obviously, you know, I have a heavy Jupiter influence in my chart. The name Bruce is B-R, which, if, for those who've studied a little bit, you know, the Burr is part of the, I'm not sure if it's clear to those, but for those who've studied B-R, Burr is, deals with the word covenant. And Usa, you know, it deals with power. It's Egyptian. So Barusa deals with, you know, the power of the covenant. So, you know, all the Bruces out there have some sort of already arrangement made.
Right. Well, you know, and there actually is something in a name, though. I mean, I think it's important to say that language and words really do mean things.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's another whole chapter. We have time, but I will get to part of that, which is an exciting part of my mentorship. I've had like three mentors, and my current understanding of language, color, and light, which a lot of people who work with that in healing know that it also has a root in ancient language and communicating with the higher realms. So, you know, the Shifter of Zera, you know, in the Kabbalah Arcana kind of stuff,
right.
All brings that to light. But before we get there, back to the lions, those who appreciate you know, the motifs of lions, you'll see them face to face or back to back. Either way, the symbolism, right, had something to do with the guardians, right, of, some people say the gold of the gods, some people say, you know, to the highest way of appreciating the cosmos. And it was through the Ark, A-R-K, of, you know, the Ark of the Covenant. So, in the tree trunk itself, which we go back to the square of Pegasus, that was the gateway which the Aborigines used to drop ropes and maneuver up and down through their dream state.
All right, okay.
Okay, so in the stars, over the years, I started to appreciate, when you look at, I have a link somewhere for the Chinese astronomy. It's in,
it's up on my site.
When you go to it, it's a fascinating blend of just terms. It doesn't get to the picturesque part, but it'll give you a good feel that the Chinese, you know, took a large part of the sky and organized it. And, you know, there's trees there. You know, the word, the tree thing is manifested there, right?
Right.
Let's just go back to the lions. Well, the lions, the Xie in Chinese, deal with the position in the heavens, which was between Leo and Cancer.
And why is that significant?
Leo and Virgo.
Right. Okay.
Well,
okay. Yeah.
In those who have studied the Dendera Zodiac at Hathor, and that takes a, believe me, that takes a lot of doing. And my colleague and co-writer and mentor, Rush Allen, who I'll give some credit to, he has the Eye of Siloam website, which is linked, eyeofsiloam.com, see people's blah, blah, blah. Most important with his work is that he brought me to understand how the last, more or less, scientific storytelling tale of life was captured around 48 BC when the Egyptians finished the amazing artwork and math model of life in the Dendro Zodiac.
Mm-hmm.
So the focus there in this case is that there are many gateways, okay? We're going to call gateways. You have the gateway into heaven, which could be through Virgo, which is up, right? You got the gateway into the abyss, the down part, which is near Sculptor, right? And for those who are not yet familiar with the whole position of how Earth moves in our solar system, which moves within the galaxy, up and down was very important to the ancients. So when you look up, you're actually looking for Virgo, you know, in the top. And when you're thinking down, the nadir, that's in the position where Sculptor is. So, you know, Nut and Geb, you know, in the Egyptian thing, created that nice uniform, like, spherical orb that surrounds us in the dark. And that helped everybody know their way around the stars. That's where it starts. Now, it gets a little bit more interesting because when you try to go back to the lions in Hathor, they already figured out this very complicated, beautifully designed, symmetric picture of, you know, animals and half-animal man creatures and all that. And they all had names that applied to stars and people and the psychometric part of the cosmos. So the lion part deals with a Cancer-Leo border, which is actually where man and God sort of meet, okay?
Okay.
Cancer-Leo, right? The Leo-Virgo, right? And you see the two, see how the two lions have two sides, two faces?
Yes, I do, yeah.
One faces heaven, the other one faces the Virgin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Virgin, as it was carefully dictated in the in Revelations and in the New Testament, was a complete... I don't mean fabrication, but it was a redesign of this earlier understanding.
Right, all these things are retellings of older stories for the most part.
Right,
yeah.
So my goal was to first find where, you know, the woman clothed in the sun with the moon at her feet and the stars at her head.
That we see represented all over the place in our country even.
That's right.
Statue of Liberty. I mean, look at that.
That's right, and the I should say maybe the Masons and the Vatican were the true split in how, for no lack of a better term, the Anunnaki would kind of present the dictations of truth, and they would be locked down pretty permanently in those two areas. Okay,
right.
You understand the position of the lions again. Going back to lions, is that you see in the Han, back to China, in the Han Dynasty, they seem to be more cosmically aware. They used a lot of these energy grid motifs, the lions, the tree of life, and things like that, and, you know, around the dead, on pottery, all that stuff. And what happened was, when you come to China and, you know, you see libraries with two lions, right? Except the lions there are sleeping or more or less resting. But in China, they're at a power stance of protection. Both of them, on the left and right side, in the left and right paw, they have a small orb at their paw, right? Now, most people don't understand what that is, but that actually is the star Regulus, which the Greeks called Apollyon. And the Apollyon is the little lion, right? And it became an important feature to understand how the culture honored, if you will, the world tree and the whole pillar to heaven. And the two lions are there. And their paw is on the star Regulus, which, for those who know Regulus, it's a very important star for understanding the position of the ecliptic prior to precessionary change, and also prior to the arrival of spring. And I'll rest there for a second, so that maybe if I could comment on something. But
please, yeah.
In your mind's eye, mm-hmm. right, you have the importance of Leo, Regulus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ark of the Covenant, the Dendera Zodiac, those gates we talk about. You could say one protects, you know, the lion looking at the Virgo, you know, lion and Virgo have a unique regal connection of heaven on earth, right? King and queen, things like that. But the Cancer-Leo boundary is a little bit more complicated. Cancer obviously defines the senses, right? So for a man to become a man, he has to come into this world and gain access to sensitivity. And that's probably where the path of the true priest, the Tanxian journey, begins, you know, at the Cancer-Leo boundary. So what I had to learn was on the back of the lion, you know, on the Dendro Zodiac, there's a little prince, and he's looking at what looks like a big crab, right? But actually, he is facing his lord. The crab also has a solar parameter to it, like a sun.
Right. Now, all these things are represented above and below, yeah.
Right? So as the little prince rides the back of the lion, it sort of tells us that, you know, each person has to, you know, stop being a crybaby and become like a man.
Mm.
And the ancients were very, as you can imagine, from every kind of aspect of Roman Empire and China wars, men had to be men to carry on sort of maybe dynastic church of the time. And so that area was a very important part in designing this metaphysical kaleidoscope of imagery for people to gaze upon, right?
Right.
And it was interesting, if I'm not mistaken, the Dendro Zodiac actually, in the zodiacal format, actually, Cancer, is the number, whatever it is in the whole scope, was taken out. When you walk in there, you're supposed to leave your senses behind when you go into the temple. So the idea of leaving your senses behind, leaving Cancer, you know, the image of Cancer behind, was to give over, you know, to cosmic intent or the higher way.
Right.
You understand? So,
you know, it's amazing. The metaphor comes to my mind, and it's not a metaphor. I think of the word cancer, you know, when we look at it in a medical sense, and the idea of leaving cancer behind, you know,
yeah,
and moving beyond the disease of the body, which is,
sure,
again, another one of these things that's connected. So anyway, thank you. Yeah.
Well, that's good, because remember, the cancer sign was once two scarabs, you know, and they supported the dung beetle ball, you know, the dung beetle supported the ball of dew that made life what it was.
Right.
So, you know, out of the dung comes new life.
Including okay. Mushrooms.
Including mushrooms. Right. So my thinking is that, you know, you look at the picture of the world tree and its large canopy that rises up through Pegasus, and, you know, you have a lot of images that are supposed to help you transcend, you know, the physical world that we're given.
Right.
Now, just let's see if we could turn back. We've got the lions, we've got the Regulus star. I was born, you know, in 53, but my zenith alignment is dead center through Regulus, okay? Obviously, that would have some significance in interpretation of my journey. And so, through time, I became very, you know, close to Regulus and what it meant. So it wouldn't surprise me that in the Lighthouse Canyon Observatory, Regulus is part of the whole, you know, arc. There's like an arc, A-R-C, of mounds and stone pillars that define the images of that sequence of, I guess, the story for that part of the globe. Okay? So when you go to that GeoCities website and you look at some of the pictures and the pillar and the map, you know, what's interesting, too, that one needs to know is that that latitude is directly tied to Tiwanaku. Now, go figure that. Tiwanaku. Of course, the date of Tiwanaku is later in the piece than, you know, 3200 BC or whatever, but that's not the real issue, right? It doesn't mean the temple or that setup was done then. It means that it was a select location where the advanced knowing of astronomer priests, whatever they captured perfectly when they erected it or when they added to it, you can go backwards in time, you can go forwards in time. So literally, that's a time tunnel, right?
Right.
Which we, with computers now, can easily do. But once you get that aligned, maybe it's like Carl Monk's grid, you know? Whatever science they used to make sure it was just perfect was aligned to Tiwanaku, which 800 BC. It's more of an 800 BC platform. But either way, it works. So that's something to consider when you think about bigger pictures and alignments. You know, what's the significance of a gateway of the sun, right?
Yeah, follow me, right? No, I'm totally with you. And you just paint this picture. I'm lost in it, but I love it. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, getting lost in it is, unfortunately, this is the first time I've had to do more than, you know, write.
Yeah, no, I mean it in a good sense. In other words, you're taking me there, and it's exactly what it's meant to do, I think. So
sure.
you're doing a wonderful job.
Let's go back to Mycenae. Mycenae used the two lions, right?
Yes.
Lion's Gate. There's something called the Lion's Gate in, where was Mycenae? Well, in obviously Asia Minor, in near Greece. And their cyclopean use of stone was quite magnificent. And it is my theory that variety of evidence indicates that the Mycenaean or a team of them had found their way to Australia and set up a frontier town, frontier colonies, around the time, I'd say, prior to their downfall, so it would have to be before 1100 BC, right?
Right.
So again, we're looking at 1600 BC, when the Shang culture started to define a strength, but also a weakening, which means not more than 300 years from 1600 to 11 or so, it was going downhill, but it also would cross over the time of the Moses epic, you know,
right.
In 1230, whatever.
Whatever.
Right. Right. So as we get closer to 1100, right, that's when there is sort of another time of, we'll call it darkness, and things sort of fade out for several hundred years. And so it's not clear what happened in Australia, but we know that the Gympie platform, the latitude there is very, very, very significant. There's a beautiful presented map of the Milky Way symmetry over Australia using that latitude to define how time and position of, could be just cosmic reckoning,
mm-hmm.
was divined. And That map there on part two of the China story is very, very scientific and very, very useful. An example was, before I knew that, before I met Rush on that level, I told him that Gympie pyramid site was aligned almost equally right to Uluru, which is, you know, Ayers Rock.
Yes, in Australia.
Thought,
smack dab in the center, essentially, of Australia.
Yeah, that's right. Alice Springs, of course, a little north, but mm-hmm. if you really want to get technical by latitudes and longitudes, and people maybe could have traversed using stars from Gympie all the way to the Ayers Rock and say, bingo, look where we are. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in the center of the world now, or center of the Earth. Ayers Rock, of course, Uluru has a great significance of Mother Earth there. And then from there, of course, all that Aboriginal great storytelling just beautifully and more beautiful. So after I journeyed through there and mapped out on those maps some very significant sites, it gave me empowerment to know that it's all connected.
Huh.
It's all beautifully connected.
All right.
It's
all
not
right.
just
all
random.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. All right. Well, look, Bruce, that's yeah. that's a good place to take a little breather, okay?
Okay, great.
And certainly, yeah, amazing stuff that we're seeing all over the planet, and the connections are just remarkable, Bruce. All right, everybody, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's a few minutes after 1 a.m. in the morning now, on the 24th, of April 2007. On the phone, live with us from Beijing, China, is the wonderful Bruce Raphael, a regular Indiana Jones in the flesh, on the line with us and sharing stories from around the world, including amazing work and research that he's been doing in China recently. And we'll come back with Bruce in just a few more minutes. On the web, you can check all this stuff out at my site at MikeHagan.com, and we'll have this show up and in the archives in the next 24 hours or so, hopefully. And, well, we'll play one more piece of music here. And what's it called? How about this one? Crows Playing with Water. All right, Crows Playing with Water. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back in just a few minutes with Bruce Raphael, live from Beijing, China.
Crows playing with water. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, about 8 minutes after 1 a.m., a little bit after 2 p.m. in Beijing, China, with my guest, Bruce Raphael. And we'll get right back to him. Bruce, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Are we on again?
We are on again.
Great. Now, if there is an opportunity to speak to any listeners, I don't know if they are falling asleep. Or...
Oh, no, we've got all kinds of people. In fact, you'd be surprised. I have people asking... they want to get their questions in for sure, and I thought maybe
sure.
After the next break we'll do that. But
okay.
You want to do it now?
Good. There's so much material that if I could slow down. I just wanted to say one thing before you bring it
sure,
in.
Sure, sure, sure.
What's important about the Leo connection just here in China is that the word Leo in Chinese is six, right, the number six.
Mm-hmm.
And the six-petaled flower, you know, is the star. I mean, well, say for right now, it's the Star of David.
Sure, sure. You got the hexagram, yeah.
Right. Now, the hexagram empowers many aspects of the five becoming six. We have a more or less something that you may have thought comes out of Egypt because you have two pyramids interlocking, and each one defines a different element as it remanifests itself into the next. So, you know, you have... As people know in the Arcana, you have fire of fire, you know, you have fire of water, you have fire of earth,
mm-hmm.
right? You have fire of spirit,
right?
Right? And this goes on with each one. So each one has five. But to move it into the realm of six is obviously a part of a grid map because, you know, the icosahedron, the 12-sided part, seems to end up in the Becker-Hagen's
in the grid. The Earth grid. Yeah.
So six is important. So
it's also a cube. It's also the number of sides on a cube, and it sort of represents the three-dimensional space, maybe.
Very good. And I didn't think about that. A cross, if I'm not mistaken, the cross.
If you unfold it,
if you rolled up.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. If you unfold a cube, you'll get a cross. Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So the situation that cross could be a tree. Now I'm just thinking in this case, getting into heaven, you got to climb. You got to go
climb
up.
Climb the tree.
Jacob's ladder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the number six still has a connection to the flower of life,
uh-huh.
which in all our esoteric studies we all know. That the flower of life was part of like a clinic, the clinic of Egypt, an ancient clinic of a club of some sort that defined a code of knowledge and understanding and where you go within that information.
Mm-hmm.
So the flower of life image occurs very much so in this study that I've done. For example, in the Mycenaean pottery, which I didn't put up, I will do that for part three. I'm going to get more detailed on the web studies. But the star, the number, the 6 points, has little petals around a flower,
mm-hmm.
is found in China. I mean, I saw it on buildings and the like, and it's more of a heavens number, right? It defines the next order above five,
mm-hmm.
Which we know the five elements. So I found it interesting that, the character of the book, his name is Cooper Wheeler.
Right, in your first book, right?
In the first book, right.
Yes.
One of the codes that he discovers is that Australia used to be known as the land of the Holy Spirit, by the Vatican. And it was always a hard place to find, and, it was mystery and whatever. But it was also a land of secrets.
Mm.
It's an amazing time capsule of a place, as I found. But what Cooper Wheeler discovers is that he's led to the 6 points around the entire continent, well, most of the large part of the continent, that actually paints out or draws out this flower of life. And the dead center of it is, of course, a mystery site of sorts, which is another part of the story. So I guess, in the sense where you think of where heaven and earth connect, Australia comes in that picture. But in China, for example, China is a place with as much beauty and power and rawness as anywhere you'd find in the world. And the idea that Leo, six, and all this imagery surrounds their culture almost like a guardian,
mm-hmm.
is sort of important, right? So considering what we're talking about here, it's important to just understand that there is always a top and a bottom. When you're trying to figure out what was connecting China, you could look at the Big Dipper, seven stars. They love the number seven. So,
mm-hmm.
Emperor Judi found seven stones in the soil and decided to build the Temple of Heaven there, which is in the first article. There's a click you can look at and see how beautiful it is. Well, there are seven large stones that are there, and they happen to be they look like the image of the Big Dipper, right? But we know that the Big Dipper, Ursa Major, connects you to the Little Dipper, which is, of course, connected to the Pole Star.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so they had if you look at the arc of the Covenant of the Sun, the Covenant of the Sun chart, you can see where, from around the time of Tuban, where that star leads the way, to the time of the Little Dipper's north or pole star, part of the transformation of that period of time is that we're moving into a new alignment with that star, right?
Yes.
So we're moving from one star system actually to another. And there's a lot of discussion about that, but I just want to let people know that the Chinese were very involved with that star constellation, okay? For whatever reason that maybe the listeners can provide. I have some theories of my own, but it's interesting to note. So we've got the number seven, right? So
mm-hmm.
we had five, we moved six, and now we're into seven. So,
right.
there you go. I mean, for right now, I'll keep it simple, but when you add 5, 6, and 7, you know, you get 18, which are the three sixes.
Right, and if you reduce 18 to its digital root, you get 9.
You get 9, right, which is, of course, what all this leads to. You know, in the simple terms, you know, 9 is has certain meaning, but in my study, it means something else. Again, it could be a completion of, you know, linking the 13 chakras, or it could be opening up some new doorways of the mind. But in either case, it is Aquarian. You know, everyone, no one could discount that. We're moving, we're closing Pisces, and we're ready to move into Aquarius. That's,
right.
That's the significant part.
Okay.
Anyway,
all
for your listeners.
Well, there's some stuff that's, you know, directly related to that, obviously. People are listening really closely, and they thank you, and they say that they're with you, and that you can talk clearly, and they're totally with you. That they're not,
right.
you're not losing anybody. They say a certain person here says, I wonder what Bruce's thoughts of Walter Cruttenden's work are, and then
that's come up. It's interesting you mention that. I mean, obviously there was some dirt thrown at in his area that dealt with PX. Is he the PX specialist?
No, well, he's a binary star guy. He talks about the fact that we're part of a binary system, and that you know, there's a lot of evidence in the historical record, he says, and that he tries to document in a book that he wrote, you know, about the fact that the sun and the earth are, you know, and our system is essentially a binary system, but we just don't realize it.
That's right. The CPAC group, I think, is
yes.
part of that Arizona.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah, and they
now,
do a conference every year, October or something, yeah.
Sure, sure. Yeah, okay, I'm familiar with that now. My comment is that for right now, dealing with, obviously, our understanding of the sidereal timing.
And precession and all these things, right?
Well, just even we just take Sirius, you know, the star system there, you know, in the Canis Minor,
right, which is by the way the star that he says is the most likely candidate to be our binary partner.
Of course, I think just to bring it down, I have to read his book and understand more what his dictations would actually do to help us. Sometimes, you know, the patterns of connecting the dots for him would be different than mine, okay?
Yeah. I'm with you.
Right?
Yeah.
But if I'm looking at Sirius for right now and the position at Gympie, the platform that was set up somewhere around 700 BC or maybe 1200 BC was perfect because Sirius would be significant and useful from around that time all the way to around 700 AD where it disappeared at the time of the summer solstice.
Okay, right.
Now, what's it? Okay, so what's interesting
Yeah, this is
there,
great. You know, for people who aren't familiar with a lot of this old star charts and stuff we're talking about, there's great software and stuff out there that's actually free that you can sort of now go look at the way things looked last week or last month or 3,000 years ago or whatever. So, anyway, okay, Bruce.
Well, Eventually, by the end of the story here, I will lead into something that Rush Allen has developed as a teaching aid. But the most important thing is that what I learned was if the Aborigines, you know, Sirius and had a certain importance.
Sure.
The Pleiades had a certain importance.
Mm-hmm. The Seven Sisters,
right?
Yeah. And in many Native traditions in North America, I have Lakota ancestry, and those metaphors, although they may be represented a little bit differently, are the same.
Right. Interesting you mentioned that. So the location, of course, where everything is important because when you're looking at the significance of Procyon, you know.
Procyon, another star, yes.
Little Canis, yes.
Right.
What people have studied, the Masonic studies of architecture in Washington, right, see that there's a very high correlation between Procyon, right, and the Pentagon. And Procyon is the red, defines the color red, but it's also the dog that didn't jump into the sea to follow Osiris, right? Remember, Isis jumps in, the dog jumps in to follow Osiris when he gets thrown in the river.
Right, in the casket, yeah.
Right, but Procyon is the one who stays as a guard to watch over the land, right? So when I was, this is an interesting story, but when I was born, I was born almost in a log cabin, so it's a good story there too. But I was born on the in Farmington, Connecticut, along the river, which was beautiful, and a very interesting rock art piece was there for all my life, which took time for me to notice it. And it was it had this, you know, this dynamic sculpture effect, which they know the old Irish, when they came to Americas, had used. They were able to define a metaphor of the stars by carving rock and telling a story.
Sure.
And of course, leaving a lot of, whether it was Agam or other scripts inside this, which is another story. But at that rock, which was very large, half of the face was that of a man with a rock in its mouth. And the other half, when you looked at it from another point, was the perfect picture of like a Cocker Spaniel, a dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that could easily, once Rush and I figured it out, there was a date, and it's facing where it was facing. You know, it was facing the sunset. And I can only say that dealing with Sirius and Osiris, or Orion, right, as in a connection, because I think you mentioned Orion. Didn't you mention Orion?
Yeah, I'm doing a show with a guy named Gary David who wrote a book called Orion and the Hopi, and he makes some very interesting correlations between Hopi mythology and again, the
Egyptian?
The Egyptian mythology, but also this connection to the stars and the way that Orion ties into both of them. Yeah.
Well, I look forward to talking to him.
He's cool. He'll be on the show in a couple weeks. So.
Right. So at this point in time, one of your listeners asked the question. What was that question again?
Well, we were talking about Cruttendon and
Cruttendon.
And
I touch on that, but the fact is, at Gympie itself, at the summer solstice, in a period of time, at least at 1400, when the Chinese might have been there, they would have recognized the significance of Sirius there.
Right. And just to sort of close this piece, Walter's his big contention is that precession, you know, the precession of the equinoxes, is a phenomenon that we observe not because of this wobble of the Earth, but because of the effect of this binary star. He's really not interested in much else other than that. In other words, so for me, I'm sort of like, well, precession is a phenomenon that we're observing one way or the other, whether it's because of a binary star effect or whether it's because of a wobble in our, you know, rotation or whatever. The point is that we are still observing precession, and I think that, you know, Walter's work is well done, and if that turns out to be the case, that's fine, but I think that we're still observing the same thing either way.
True. I know there's different ways to slice this pie up. It just depends who's the listeners. In the case where, you know, we're using ancient sacred science, or we're using current mathematical models, either way, you know, from my point of view, when it comes down to keeping your feet on holy ground, which means staying grounded, you have to know where celestial cognition plays into this. So otherwise, it's just another book you've read, or it's just something you can't fit in. Right? So celestial cognition is what the, you know, celestial cognition 101, this is where we're at. And to go from this stage now where ancients used a variety of models to keep in tune with the universe or keep in tune with seasons or able to travel, you know, through longitude, this is significant, you know, in a sense. I mean, that's what I'm saying because I'm dealing with the motion of peoples, and which leads me to China's great fleet, you know, led by Admiral Zhang He.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no question about it that, you know, when you do, when you read this part two, you'll get a feeling that whether you've read, you know, the Menzies book that sort of attempts to document every little bit of travel the Chinese might have done around 1400. It represents such a magnificent story, which someday someone will do a movie of. Maybe I'll do it.
Huh.
You know, out of China, yeah. Where, you know, Zhang He's fleet was just, you know, 300 of the biggest ships in the world. I mean, like super tankers, so
right.
Fine. And they were able to carry so much materials and back and forth around the globe. And then, bingo, we come back to Australia where they found this area and inhabited it, maybe mined gold and other ore for a while, and moved on. So there's some significance there, because anytime you have peoples mixing together, there is some sort of, you know, more than iconoclastic kind of a force. There is sometimes a breeding of new ideas,
sure,
hybridization,
sure.
Right?
Different memes get introduced,
so,
yes, yes.
Different themes, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, Bruce, you speak the language, Chinese?
Well, I'm
dialect?
I'm sure it's a lifetime's work,
sure.
Yeah, in Chinese, I wanted to say how important your role is and how great a guy you are. And Chinese would be Liao Bushi.
You know, I'm a Leo.
Well, you are. Well, that sounds sort of close. Liao,
yeah,
like Leo,
Bushi, yeah.
Bushi. So that's like, you know, great energy, great guy. So
thank you. I appreciate that. I really do.
L I A O. You could write this down. B U C H I. So people like you and Kent and those people, you know, you're in that category of Liao Bushi. You're doing an important service in cyberspace for all of us, I think.
Well, I think that I wouldn't have much to talk about were it not for people like you, you know. So and
yeah,
Kent, so it's great. It takes all sorts. So good for us,
right.
And I'm really pleased that we're able to do it together. And I mean, the fact that we're talking live from literally around the world, and we're broadcasting over the internet, so anyone can listen anywhere if they have the gumption. You know, people talk about the march of, you know, fascism and the end of freedom, and I say, you know, forget that. I'm as free as I've ever been, and this is remarkable stuff that we're capable of doing these days. We just have to embrace it, you know?
Okay. When we have another few minutes, whatever, is there anything you want to any questions?
2012. I mean, people are saying, you know, we were just talking about precession, and there's a whole lot of talk about 2012 and whether this is a significant, time period, or if it's just more hype and propaganda. And I don't know if you have a take on it.
I can say there is a value to, even if you look at the star chart over Giza, 2012, December 26th, what time was it around? 10:26 p.m. You know, if you set your calendar chart to that star and look at it, there's definitely a gateway tail there. There's something happening at that hour.
Mm-hmm.
So being over Giza is probably as important as looking at over Zimbabwe or any other of the great, you know, sort of locations of star studies and star worship. My feeling is that, there's a lot of simple truths that I think the 2012 thing deals with. One, like every culture, they have to put a number on something.
Right.
They put mileage on a car. They put mileage on humanity.
Right.
So that's what they did. They just dropped it. Rush and I don't feel that that's the end of time, but we call it end time scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the end of time. It's
first
end
not.
Time.
Right.
Right. So end time tells us that we have what I think, based on even the Celtic or the Gaelic interpretation, which I think still derives itself from the black monks of Scotland and Ireland. Their position was, as written in the Colburn, you know, connection thing, that the calendars would be kept secret, you know, from the Romans. So
yes.
It was about a five-year problem, you know, plus 2 years, which was the missing, I think they were called the Innocents, 0 BC and 1 BC. No, it's 1 BC. No, it's 1, minus 1 BC. And, oh, yeah, that's right. 0 BC and 0, minus 0 BC sort of thing, and then 0 AD. Those were like 2 years they didn't put in there, right, when the Gregorian calendar was being set up. That's important because two missing years, sort of, if there is a code of the ancients, if 2 years are missing, that'll mess things up. So what's interesting is that why would this is the part which I want to lead the listeners to. In the calendar and in the Covenant of the Sun chart, you're going to look at 1998, right? Very important year. Many people know that was the time, 97, 98, when the dark light collapsed and finished its role of 12,600 years. Okay, so when that finished, and it was time to move north, let's say upward, the dark light would start moving towards the light, and this was called the first fire ceremony. So 1998 was actually the beginning of a new world order in a technical time scale speak. That date itself was written in the gender zodiac. It was written and carefully, I guess, calculated, right? The time between 98, 99, 2000, right? And then the 12 is roughly 15 years. But according to the Gales, the 0, 2000 wouldn't count, right? And you'd have, if they had the two missing years in the 5, 7, my guess is that the end time scenario already passed, right? You know what I'm saying?
That's fun. No, it's actually great, actually, because in the chat room here, I made a comment, believe it or not, about 45 minutes ago, and I said, Armageddon already happened. Time to get on with business.
Right. That's true, man. Very, Mike, you're very perceptive in your, sort of laconic, fun way of saying things. 2007, actually, if you can't feel it, you have to be numb. I think this date is the end year. The five-year difference is just our calendar going into 2012. I know... John Major Nankins would probably help define why that calendar works or works perfectly for them, for the Mayans.
Mm-hmm.
But Rush and I feel from the Western, the North Western European mystery tradition, we're still thinking that this is the year.
Mm.
It's not over yet. We haven't even reached June yet.
Right.
So this is a very intense year for a variety of astrological reasons and things like that.
Uh-huh.
So I just wanted to let it be known that from 1998, that was actually, if you add 5 and skip the year and make it 6, we're very close to this 2006-07 and 2007-08. Mm-hmm. This period of time is this period.
Right.
After which I don't think it'll be very important. If you don't, listen to these shows, read mm-hmm. my book, or read the book,
mm-hmm.
it won't really help. You're just going to have to go along with the dog's bowl and just be fed whatever you're given.
Right.
But some of us, I think, really would love to, climb the rope, get back into the cosmic pronouncements, and be ready for the next big celebration.
Right. Well, I think it's happening. I really do. And it's interesting you mentioned the correlation of the dates and stuff. And I'm I love John Jenkins. He's a great guy, and I've really doing valuable work. And I think he would be the first to recognize that this whole thing that we're all talking about, you can't pin the tail on it and say, okay, it's going to happen at this particular moment. We're in the middle of something, a process that's sort of unfolding, and everybody sort of agrees to a certain extent that that's happening. Where it's going, I'm sure that very few would be willing to say, but anyway, I think it's very interesting and relevant.
Well,
for sure.
Let's take for example Dr. Violette's work.
Sure,
it's
Paul
quite conceivable
sure.
that in the ancient Hebrew, ayir es ayir, it's the action of becoming one with our statement of being or consciousness. On that larger scale, whether we're zapped by, the galactic center pulse, which creates a lot of havoc physically,
right.
But also adds to it. Now, this is what this Pratt and what I call the Q research deals with, that the Taurus Plasma 9 it fits in there somewhere. It could occur first, it occur after we get whacked. It's not very clear yet, but we know that it happens and that Shaman took great interest in seeing what they saw through the ionosphere as it, showed off its lights and power, but it also affected your brain.
Hmm.
So my thinking is that 2012, we know, is that solar winter. I mean, it's supposed to take place around December anyway, where we align ourselves with the center of our galaxy, right? Am I clear on that?
Yes.
Our solar system aligns with the sun, right? Now, that alignment is peculiar. It's not like everything's flat, but however the planets align at that moment, they know that that's another important aspect to the 2012 count. So, you and I and Ken and many who read this know that GRBs, galactic, what's it called, GRB?
Gamma ray burst.
Yeah, that kind of thing. as it may have triggered the great tsunamis and the like in the last few years,
right.
It's quite conceivable that that pulse may already be on its way. Mm. We know that it's not something that just happens within 8 hours. The larger ones have a far more, a greater impact.
Oh, yeah, and they travel, I mean, unimpeded, essentially, across space. And
that's right. So whether we know it in time or not, it's not important. I think the idea is to be prepared for the feel.
I agree.
The feel that comes along with it.
Right.
You know, it's that sort of thing. But I still think, regardless of how it affects human lives, I believe that part of our culture now is starting to understand that, you know, if you want to have a happy and joyful life, you do have to practice and work at it. It doesn't come because you just believe in God or that you let God or, you know, Jesus do all the hard work. Literally, we're now being given all the tools to carry on this work and take it to the next level individually.
Mm-hmm.
So
please enter your destination number now.
Hey, Bruce. Well, everybody, I wasn't going to take a break, but I will, and I'll get Bruce back on the phone here. This is called Adios at Yangguan Pass. Sort of appropriate. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, back in just as soon as possible with Bruce Raphael. All right, it only took a minute and 45 seconds to lose and reestablish a connection to my friend Bruce Raphael in Beijing. And I think we got him back. Bruce, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you. I'm sorry for that. I guess this happens now and again. We have all kinds of great cultural tales going on here just to watch people adapt to the modern what's called the new flat earth policy, where there's a level playing ground. Well, watching the Chinese adapt quickly is pretty amazing because they're a very intelligent race. And the things they're doing with money and everything, it's a little bit like a grab bag, I have to tell you. But I just want to defend the situation that, you know, in America went through it, and China was in the poo when I was a kid.
Right.
Now, think about it. You can create any kind of demonization of any culture. I mean, America's got its hands full, too.
For sure.
But here in China, they are unaware of all of what we're talking about on the phone. So it's coming at them like a freight train as well.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meanwhile, this karmic alliance with the physical pleasures and all these new things, it's amazing.
Right.
It's amazing. You know, we had, you know, funny-looking Chevrolets when all this was going on. Now they got the most modern-looking, gorgeous, expensive cars, and they're everywhere,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like everybody's got a BMW or whatever. So it's just an unusual application of the law of you know, haves and have-nots, and it's time for China to finally maybe finish this whole fifth age, the fifth loop, you know, this way. I mean,
right. Let me ask you a question with regard to Chinese culture and what you're experiencing. I know that it's difficult to get my sight in China. And
yeah,
and
sorry.
No. I
don't
think it's, you know, particularly of odious intent or anything. I'm just curious, and I just wonder about internet access in general and about general personal freedoms. You know, we get the story here in the West and in America that, you know, things are so oppressive, et cetera, in China. You know, but that's, you know, there's propaganda peddled on both sides, right? So,
of course. Yeah. I'm not too sure, you know, exactly what the comment here. I could say, honestly, that from a normal perspective, you know, you have normal and abnormal behavior, right? Mm-hmm. We know that things that deal with religious behavior are more watched, as actually they are in its anti-universal side in every culture. You know what I mean?
Right.
Anti-universe means like, you know, the David Koresh thing or something. Well, anything that resembles something like that here is carefully, you know, extinguished.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
I mean, even if you're a Buddhist, you know, you have to be careful. You're not going to open up your own printing press. It's not that kind of world here yet.
Mm-hmm.
Things are stays at a modicum of calm and normalcy. Okay, maybe it's like it was in the Ming Dynasty for some, but too bad. You have to get around it, right?
Right. For now, that's the way it is.
That's right. But the internet is rolling. Mm-hmm. You know, they're trying to control as many problems. I mean, they've controlled gun control. I mean, I haven't heard a gun go off. No one's got guns here, only the people who protect the banks. You know?
yeah.
Seriously.
Of course. Right.
You not even a toy gun. I mean, maybe there are. I haven't seen any. But they're very cool about that here. So you feel safe.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's weird here, like in the U.S. now, you know, everybody's got a gun, and it's almost the opposite.
Completely.
Yeah, I mean, it's not almost, it is the opposite. In fact, there's more guns in this country than there are people. And so now now the gun control people, I mean, they're fighting a battle that cannot be won, but now they want to control ammunition, la, la, la. But, I mean, it's sort of like, I live in Missouri, you know, in mid-Missouri. And this is a place that's pretty conservative in its values and this sort of thing. Believe it or not, I'm doing this radio show from right in the middle of it. But but the people here are very partial to their firearms as well.
Well, it's part of the right to bear arms.
Well, that's right. And my whole point by all this stuff is that, you know, you can pass any law you want or whatever, but just try to come here to mid-Missouri and take these guns away from these people and see how that works out.
Right. Which brings us to the most, well, one of the more critical things about the gun issue. With the, you know, the sad extinguishing of 33 lives by a, what could be a, you know, mind control victim or whatever.
Yeah, who knows what was up with him, sure.
Yeah.
And of course, you're referencing the Virginia Tech thing that went down last week.
That's right. So the VT thing, I'm going to ask people to refer to the cosmogenesis description of Rush Allen's assessment of the time and place of the occurrence and how Cho's involvement, it was determined by something that was, I mean, based on this even natal chart and the way Rush completes in the picture when you read it, it's clear that the man had a duty to judge, okay? And basics to that is that, you know, when you look at the star chart, Ophiuchus, you know, the one who steps out of the sea, he is sort of, to the Hopi, Ophiuchus was the, you know, the pale rider of the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Ophiuchus was not only the pale rider, he was Masao.
Yes, Masao, which is a creator. Yeah,
a creator, well, also a destroyer. But
yes, of course.
The fact is, you know, he's carrying two serpents, right,
mm-hmm.
or two rods. And in the case, you know, where, whether it's coincident or not, you know, and this young person had to fulfill a sort of duty that, you know, has all kinds of cryptic 9/11-ish issues written through it, numerically and all that, NBC, right, Ishmael's axe. So when you read through Cosmogenesis, this is just one example of defining human behavior. Others could be It could be some other event. It does not say I have to be just a human empowered one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be an earthquake and things like that. So when you go to the IS Alone site, you'll see a variety of categories, which will take time to familiarize yourself. But
of course,
I'm sure that, you know, in my how many years now, 10 years, 16, 20, almost 10-11 years of study with Rush, it's pretty clever. If you go to my link at the bottom of the page to the book, and you go to the bottom of the, you know, the book blurb, there is something about the 9/11 interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to bring that to attention because cosmogenesis, if you look at it, has a, you know, a very eerie ascension of stars that took place on 9/11.
That's right.
So no matter,
yeah, it was an occult deal for sure.
Right. Occult could be the hidden aspect of truth, whether it was defined or worked out to that moment is, you know, kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
The fact is, you know, you have all the images that deal with the twins,
mm-hmm.
the Gemini, Perseus, the Slayer, and other images that I think would be worthwhile reading through that and seeing what that interpretation would teach us all, maybe about, you know, what is divine intent. Maybe some things are not controlled as we think completely. Maybe it's just another big coincidence. I'm not sure.
Right.
I mean, to this day, I'm not sure. You know, I know I've read both sides of the story, and I'm a little amazed that they could work this stuff out.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think one of the problems that we all sort of face and that we sort of have to kind of come up against and decide how we're going to handle it is this idea of closure. I mean, everybody wants closure, you know, and somehow I just don't think we're going to get it, you know.
Okay. Well, here's do I have a few minutes left?
Yeah, we've got another we've got a good 7 or 8 minutes before we have to wrap things up.
Okay, I'm going to read something from the book here. Okay?
Please. And
Chapter 9.
Again, let's give the title of the book.
Yeah, the book, which I'm going, of course, after these shows, I am going to find a publisher for it, but
right.
It's beautifully bound and it's ready to roll, loaded with photos, the whole thing. It's called Let the Truth Be Known, and it took, it took close to 18 years to assemble into a storyline. And in this chapter, chapter 9, called Sun Talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm bringing back the image of the age of the fifth sun.
Yes.
Right?
Okay.
Moving to the age of the fifth sun. Fifth hoop, fifth five, right?
Right.
And it says, when the age of the fifth sun begins, this is on page 149, but planet Earth's populations will long for the awareness of the heavens as the grand time capsule of wisdom and home to their ancestors. What was the covenant God made with Abraham? Abraham was the man from the plains of Zohar. Deep in his heart was the missing piece of the loss of the father-son combination. He tried in vain to search for a replacement, but forgot where to look for the simple truth. Coop, who's Cooper Wheeler, the protagonist of the story, found a clue at the house of Libra, the place known as the Action of Balance, where truth is presenting a child with a rod of iron. You know, if you read in the New Testament, this comes up a lot. But this was part of an old Persian understanding of how divine intelligence takes away the ego and gives a person his true empowerment.
Okay.
So the priests in the age of Pisces knew this as the day of judgment. When the Son of Man, which you've heard Jesus talk about, which is the ego, is done away with and the Son of God takes on a physical form. Without this cognition, the mystery of the second coming would be forgotten forever. The world would steer itself onto a path of perdition. All right? So there is a comment which is more, how do we say, in Godspeak, you know, we're dealing with a term of relationship between man and his God, like father and son.
Right.
But, you know, you also have mother and son, you know, and you have a variety of conditions of which define how far we can go with our abilities, right?
Yes.
Right. So even you in the Midwest, with your role as a major communicator, you know, you are, I believe, connecting everybody to these aspects which we take personal time to vote to, but we don't really talk about it with our family at breakfast or at dinner.
Yeah, it's interesting, yeah.
You know? So this is part of what this whole operation is about. It is a lengthy discussion, and the ancients seem to have a better handle on it than we do.
Certainly, we're trying to get back what they had, apparently.
Right. So, you know, going back to what we spoke about at the beginning, is that, you know, anything that deals with a temple to the stars is not much different than our own, you know, craniosphere or our own cranium that's connected to the zenith or the nadir, depending upon where you feel like you are on the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I only could say that some people like being sensitive, you know, being a sensitive type of character, and other people like being, you know, that other person, which is more like the martial art type of person. So you've got the two flow, the flow of both of those journeys.
Yes.
And that's what we've been talking about, the Maoshan journey, which is the more rugged, tough, you know, a warrior with a shield on his back and sword,
mm-hmm.
sort of, you know, like Wesley Snipes character. And then you have the Tanxian journey, which is more what we call the path of the true priest. And as you work with that, supposedly the mana from heaven is much more sweet, put it in simple terms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, wonderful.
So that sort of tells everything. In the last minute, which we'll discuss in another show, I would like to, you know, discuss the fact that I've not forgotten the PX and the Nibiru story.
Yeah, what about all that? There are people that actually have made a couple comments in the chat room about that. I mean, is it something you can talk about in 4 or 5 minutes?
Well, I believe now, after these many years of discussion, that we know that the path itself is known. We know that Richard Day, who is another famous astronomer, tracked it. You're able to use the star once you put the program in, you're able to find out where it was, and it passes through the Centaur, right, which is the skull and crossbones.
Yeah.
We know that Nibiru actually is, you know, a combination of how the term Antichrist and Christ energy combined. The path is actually a shortcut across the complete processionary circle when you look at the path, which I will post to you later, and then you can add it to the site.
Okay.
For the next discussions. The fact is that the planet Nibiru, we think, Rush and I feel, that it was not just a physical rundown, you know, that it comes across our plane and like bowling pins just creates havoc.
Mm-hmm.
No. It has something to do with defining the downfall of kings, right, which we know with Saddam as an example.
Mm-hmm.
We know that through the period of knowing about this, it deals with the disguise or the overwhelming of truth to keep people in the dark, right? And it also deals with the call of judgment, you know, the day of judgment,
yes.
or those who, you know, take judgment on their own hands.
Right.
It does seem to deal with the fact that the rising light, you know, which is the, you know, if you take PX and reverse it,
XP
you know, is the Chiron. Cairo symbol for Christ.
Yes, let's clarify that. If you combine the Greek letter chi, which is essentially an X, and the Greek letter rho, which is essentially a P, put those two, lay one on top of the other, you get the Cairo,
right?
Which is this.
Come on.
Yeah, and it's
don't
a
you
six,
feel it? Can't you tell that they've been throwing PX at us when it actually is the XP story.
Yeah, that's wonderful, actually. And if you, it leads us to so much, you know. I actually have the Cairo as a tattoo that I wear on my left leg. I've had it for,
wow, it's been on you all this time.
Absolutely, it has been. Yeah, and it's funny because I recognize that it's been used as a Christian symbol. But I also did my own work, and I realized that they sort of hijacked it, you know, from earlier days. And
well, let me give you a clue. And in the don't laugh, I can't get to Rush Allen's site either. So he has to take the links that you can see in America. He's got to break it down for me. But what I gather in the section that deals with the what's called the Bridge of Meridian, which deals with how PX and XP really define Planet X, Nibiru as the return of Christ, that it's clear because the path of Nibiru, which passes in the groin of Golgotha underneath the centaur, passes up through shortcuts across the percent, you know, the whole circle of our planets, and it ends up at the top of the world tree. Now this is mind blowing. You have no idea what this means. The top of the world tree is where Jesus and Satan fought for the final aspects. Right?
Right? Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
Throw yourself off. Well,
sure.
The tower actually is the whole path of Nibiru, right back down to the portion of, you know, the abyss. And the highest part is through the world tree, right? Through the ark, through the ark of the tree, to the top where Cepheus is king, which is the head.
Yes.
You know, for the king. And so, if this is the case, you know, the question is, where is Nibiru now? Right?
Right.
Nibiru is in the skull where the skull and crossbone met are.
The centaur again.
It was at 1 BC where Jesus was. You know, it's just, you know, by science that you can track this. So it's a phenomenal tale. You know, it's a phenomenal story that's been there all the time, which means that before that, Nibiru obviously is something that comes from the Babylonian time. So you go back another so many thousand years, right? That's where you want to look at the scale. And they knew, I think it deals with the Anunnaki, whether they be, you know, the Thilum or whoever right now, they are the ones who would have to keep this a secret for as long as possible until we're talking about it today. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So anything that deals with this deals with star connections as well as, you know, human geopolitical behavior. It's all happening right now as we speak.
Right.
So, you know, people wanted to know how Nancy Letter and all that means. It doesn't mean anything from that point of view. It just doesn't. It doesn't have any meaning.
Mm-hmm.
You need something to connect the dots so that we're really grounded to the basic premise why we're here.
Right. What's really happening on this planet in our space here? Right.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about the grays and
all
that stuff.
Oh, boy. Well, I tell you, Bruce, I'm so pleased to hear your last few comments. But anyway, I love it. I wish we had more time. And
sure.
We'll do it again, for sure. There's so much more to talk about. And
Well, thank you so much. And like I said, you know, in the Chinese dictation, Liao Buqi, that's you. You know,
Liao Buqi. I return it to you.
Yeah, Liao Buqi, which greatness follows greatness. And you got the tattoo to prove it, so pass the word.
I'll do it, Bruce, and you do the same. Keep doing the work you're doing. It's outrageous and amazing, and I'm so appreciative that we got together and we were able to share it with other people. So we'll continue to do it, and I'll talk to you off the air, okay?
We'll talk off the air and on the Internet. Thank you so much.
Sounds
have a wonderful
great.
Day. And thanks for the listeners to be staying up so late. I love it.
I'll let them know all the links one more time before we take off, okay?
Okay,
bro. All right, everybody. Take care, Bruce.
Take care of yourself now.
All right. Everybody.
I can.
Bruce Raphael, everybody. Amazing, amazing stuff. Right from the heart of China, Beijing, coming to us live for the last couple hours, doing remarkable work there and all around the planet for many, many years. Bruce Raphael, so much great stuff coming from him, and a great deal of thanks also back to Bruce for sharing it with us. I can't tell you how much we all appreciate it. And the people in the chat room and listening are feeling the same things, I can tell. So, all right, everybody, it's Mike, and you've been listening to Radio Orbit, as always, Monday nights, 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. We've got about a minute left to go here. And I'll close out with one more piece of music here. It's called Fishing Boats at Dusk. And, well, as for the music, thanks to whoever wrote it, and thanks to whomever performed it. I have no idea who either of you are, but it's wonderful, and I thank whoever it was for the miracle of getting it to me tonight. Next week, what is it, the 30th, Richard Allen Miller. Come on back. Going to be a great program with Richard Allen Miller, doing great work himself, right here in the old U.S. of A. up in the Pacific Northwest, and we'll be talking about, I don't know, go check him out, all right? And too many things to talk about with Richard to decide what we're going to talk about tonight, so I won't put a box around it, okay? Anyway, now I'm starting to ramble because it's the middle of the night and it's 2 a.m., and I just had an amazing conversation with Bruce Raphael, and it's about time for me to say guten tag to y'all, all right? Thanks very much for listening, or guten nacht, for that matter. And
I love you all. Thanks so much. One more time, Bruce Raphael, great stuff. On the web, www.mikehagan.com. You'll be able to find this program and all of the other programs that I've done over the last few years, and the website in the archives. And I hope you check them out, share them with other people, okay? One more time, Fishing Boats at Dusk, KOPN, Radio Orbit. Check you all out later.